So Parakhov Beis opens up. Vayelech David Misham Vaymalos El Me'aras Adulam. David left. He left the city of Gas, where he made believe he was crazy, and he went to the cave. There's no better place to hide than a cave. Veishmu Echav Chol Beis Aviv Vayerdu Elav Shama. His whole family joined him in his journey because, first of all, they were afraid that Shaul was gonna take revenge and kill the whole family of David. That's what they were fearful of. Therefore, they went ahead and joined him in his running away from Shaul. Now, this is very interesting to note that there's now a family reunion, because for many years David was not really considered to be part of the family. See, what happened is Yishai was a great-grandson of Ruth. We all know the story of Ruth, that both Ruth and Arpah came from Moab, and they came back with Naomi. Arpah did not want to join Ruth. They didn't want to join. She converted. Now, it was not well known at the time, the halacha, that only a male convert from Moab is not allowed among the Jewish people, but a female convert from Moab is allowed. That was not well known. Everybody figured that both males and females from Moab are not allowed to convert. So the lineage of Yishai was very ambiguous. It was questionable. Therefore, Yishai was planning to have at least one son that will be kosher love of a call, that will be part of the Jewish people with no questions, no dubious lineage. So he came up with a plan. What was the plan? This plan actually is done still today under some circumstances. What he was going to do is he was going to marry a shifcha, marry one of his maids. And his maid, he would hopefully have a baby with this maid. And then the kids belong to him, since he's the master. And then he could go ahead and free them, and now they're allowed to be part of the Jewish nation. This is still done today under certain circumstances. When, for example, you have a mamzer, someone who's a bastard. His mother had relations when she was married, and she got pregnant from another man. The son is considered to be a mamzer, and he's a bastard, and he's not allowed to join the Jewish people, and he's not allowed to marry a Jewish girl. So what the problem is that all of his kids will also be considered to be bastards, even if he gets married regularly. So what they do is the same thing. This man marries a woman from some, either, no, sorry, he marries some a woman who was willing to convert. And what they do is they get married in an embassy of, for example, Congo or some African country where slavery is still legal. Because remember, it's got to be a real legitimate, he's so to speak, owning her as a slave, as a maid. So obviously they're getting married. Hopefully he's not going to treat her as a slave. But that way, the kids that he has belong to him, because he is, so to speak, the master. This woman who converted is his slave. That's the official title. Obviously, they're married, and they're a regular husband and wife. And then when the kids grow up, he can free them. And now they're regular Jews. They're allowed to marry any Jewish girl. So that's what Yishai was hoping to do with one of his maids. And this maid was not really happy about it. So she went over to Yishai's wife. And she told Yishai's wife exactly the plan. And his wife told him, "What can I do? I can't do anything about it because he's separated from me for the past 3 years. He doesn't want to be intimate with me anymore. There's nothing I can do." So what she did is she told the maid to go home. And Yishai was supposed to be with the maid, his wife came in instead. She came into the room and said, Yishai did not know. Similar story to Yaakov, Rachel, and Leah. So Yishai did not know what was going on. And instead of being with who he thought was his mate, he really was with his wife. And his wife got pregnant, and everyone figured that his wife was engaged in adultery, because Yishai hasn't been intimate with her for the past 3 years. No one knew that she sneaked in instead of the mate. And so when David was born, everyone rejected him. They didn't want him to be part of the family. In fact, when the family had their family dinner, whatever it was, they had a special table for David in the corner of the room. He was not allowed to eat in the family's table. He was like this neglected, rejected kid that no one wanted anything to do with. They put a table in the corner of the room for him. They gave him some food. That's why they made him a shepherd. It's not by happenstance that he happened to meet a lion and a bear and fought them off. He, in fact, was sent to a dangerous area where there are lions and bears frequently. They were hoping that he would die. They were hoping that he would get killed. Now, obviously, that didn't happen. But that's the kind of attitude that his family had towards him.
And towards the mother also.
Yeah, towards the mother also. Yeah. You can imagine what his mother was going through. Until he's appointed to be none less of the next king of the Jewish people. His family was astonished. They could not believe it. And it's amazing to see how David's reaction was, how he had, first of all, the fact that he had no anger towards his brothers. How do we know that he had no anger towards his brothers? Because if he had the slightest hint of anger, he would not merit to be king. We saw the same thing by his brother. His brother, his oldest brother, was the one who was really supposed to be king. But because, it says, as we saw in previous paragraphs, because he was angry at David for coming to the war. Now again, he wasn't screaming and yelling and breaking things, but he had a hint of anger in his heart. And because of that, he did not merit to be king. If David had one hint of anger in his heart, he too would have merited to be king. We see that the fact that he was appointed at the end to be king must mean that he had zero hard feelings towards his family. And in fact, it says in Tehillim, "Muzar ha'isi la'echai," I was a stranger to my brothers. They did not recognize me as part of the family. So now, when we're facing this family reunion, where they're joining forces together with him, this is a very, very significant moment in David's life. They're now recognizing for the first time that he will be the next king over the Jewish people. So let's see, Pasuk Beis continues. V'yiskavtu elav kol ish motzek, v'chol ish ha'sholei noyshu, v'chol ish mar nefesh, v'yeleim l'sar. V'yu imakar b'moysish. Everyone who had some kind of trouble, someone who was some kind of oppressor, they owed money to someone they didn't have money to pay. Anyone who was having some kind of trouble joined David HaMelech, and eventually he got a group of 400 men. V'yelech David misham mitpayov, he went to mitpayov. V'yemer al melech mayov, yetzana avi ve'imi itchem, ad asher eda mayasi li elekim.
But it looks as if nobody believes he is crazy. But he ran because he looks crazy. But how?
You're talking about the last week's what with Achish Melech Gath?
No, but he left because people where he was believe he is crazy and let him to go.
You're talking about Achish Melech Gath?
Yeah, but he
right.
How family knew he is not crazy?
Right. No, it was only over there in that city. That he made this. He did this in front of the police team. Remember, the police. There was no, you know. Yeah, but it was only the police team that thought this. The Jews didn't know about that episode.
He wasn't crazy. He just made believe.
It was only the police team who saw this whole episode. This news didn't travel to the Jews. So, in any case, David asks the king of Moab to take in his father and his mother. His father and his mother were older. They were not able to run, to be on the run together with David HaMelech. So he's asking a favor from the king of Moab to watch over his family. Now, this turned out to be a grave mistake because Moab, the king of Moab, not only did he not protect the family of David, but he ended up murdering each and every one of them. And there was one that was saved by Nachash Melech Ammon, Nachash the king of Ammon. And David was very grateful, very appreciative to Nachash the king of Ammon until the end of days. We're going to see later on how David paid back the favor for saving one member of his family. Pasuk Dalet, v'yanchem esfnei melech Moab, v'yeshu v'im akol yimei yes David b'matuda. So in the beginning they stayed with Melech Moab, but then we'll see what happens. Pasuk Hei continues, v'yemar God hanavi el David. God, which was a navi, comes to David and he tells him, leiteshu b'matuda, don't settle in the citadel, in the fortress. Lech v'asa el eret Yehuda, v'yelech David v'yar charis. I want you to leave Melech Moab. You are not safe over there. God knew exactly what was going to... I don't know if he knew exactly what was going to happen, but he knew that David was not safe over there. So he told David to leave and go to Eretz Yehuda. Eretz Yehuda had a lot of supporters of David, and therefore he was told by God Anavi to go to Eretz Yehuda, where he had a lot of fans and supporters. Ve'ishma Shol kinoida David v'anoshim asher itoi. Shol is now hearing that David is gathering strength. He's got a whole camp together with him. Shaul is sitting in the Giva. We mentioned already that the house of Shaul was Giva Shaul, the Mount Shaul. Now, the Chazal say, why does it mention here Giva and Rama? What is the connection between Giva and Rama? Chazal explained that the reason why Shaul remained in the Giva, he remained in his kingship for an extra 2.5 years, he was really supposed to be removed from rulership right after the war with Amalek, where he did not kill out everybody he was supposed to. But he remained for an additional 2.5 years in power. And Chazal explained why was that? Because Shmuel davened to Hashem and asked him, please do not remove Shaul from power until the day I die. And in fact, Shaul remained in power until Shmuel died. Only after Shmuel died did Shaul lose the kingship and David became king instead. So anyway, so Shaul is sitting now on his throne, surrounded by his servants. Shaul turns to his servants and he tells them, he's turning to them as Bnei Mini, the children of Binyamin, part of the tribe of Binyamin. Do you really think that if you join forces with Ben Ishai, he's giving him a derogatory name, the son of Ishai, he doesn't even call him by his name. If you do think that the son of Ishai will provide you with these large estates, do you really think that he's going to have positions for you? He's got a shtetl for each and every one of you? He doesn't. Maybe one or two or three of you or five of you are going to get something, but not much more than that. It's not worth it for you to join David HaMelech. Ki kashartem kulchem alai ve'en goyles osni. You are all together in the plot to dethrone me. B'choros b'ni im ben Ishai ve'en choyel mikem alai. My son already rebelled against me, and he has a covenant with David, and none of you are worrying about it. Doesn't seem like it. None of you are telling me what's going on. My son is now fighting. He's working against me. This was a major concern to Shaul, and he's trying to find out from his servants what is going on. He's trying to gather some intelligence. Vayan Doegai Doimi. Doeg, as we mentioned last week, happened to be on the scene when David came to Noiv, the city of Goyanim. V'unitza v'alav di Shaul. V'yoymar. Doeg turns to Shaul and he says, Re'isis ben Ishai bon Noiv el Achimelech ben Achituv. I saw David come to the city of Noiv And he went into the house of Achimelech, the son of Achituv. Now, it's very important to pay attention very carefully to the words of Doeg. Doeg was extremely crafty, and he basically framed Achimelech for something he had not done. Achimelech did not have any intention at all to rebel against Shaul, but the way he tells the story of exactly what happens, he's painting a very bad picture for Achimelech. He's making it seem as if Achimelech actually had an intention to rebel against Shaul HaMelech. So what does he say? He says, David came to the house of who? Of Achimelech. He did not come to the house to Beis Hashem, to consult a Kohen. He's leaving that part out. He's coming to the house. First he comes to the house. They had a private conversation. No one really knows what went on over there. And let's see what happened after that. First, he consulted the Urim V'Tumim, and then after he consulted the Urim V'Tumim, he provided him with food. Not only did he provide him with food, but he gave him the sword of Goliath. Now, it's very important the order of the way he presents what exactly happened. He changed the order from what really happened. What really happened is first he did not go to his house, to his home, to the house of Achimelech. He went to Beis Hashem. He went to consult the Urim V'Tumim. And first, Achimelech gave him food and a sword, because David told him that he's running away. He did not tell him that he's running away, but he told him that he's on a secret mission from Shaul HaMelech. And only after he gave him food, that's when he consulted the Urim V'Tumim. That's what really happened. But Doeg switched the order, because he wanted to make it look really bad for Achimelech. So first he points out that he came to his house, right? And also that explains why he wasn't careful to not tell Doeg. If he knew that Doeg was there, present at the time, and he was plotting with David to rebel against the king, obviously he would not be foolish enough to reveal the plan. But that's why Doeg is saying that first they plotted privately in the house. No one really knows what went on over there. And then he gave him the food and the bread. But what really happened was, first he gave him the bread and the sword, and he didn't hide it, because he didn't figure, right, if Shaul HaMelech would know the truth, the first thing he gave him was the food and the sword, and Doeg knew about it, then he would think, obviously Achimelech did not know that David is rebelling, because if he did, he would do it in secret, he would do it in hiding. The fact that he did it publicly shows that he had zero intention to rebel against the king. Right, and another conviction that Doeg had was the fact that he consulted the Urim V'Tumim first. So if he consulted the Urim V'Tumim first, obviously he knew right then and there that he's running away. There's no way that he would not know that after he consulted the Urim V'Tumim. And after that, what did he do? He gave him bread and a sword. Clearly, he intentionally is trying to rebel against the king, because he already knew that David was running away. And then he gave him the food and the sword. Another point he left out was the fact that David was famished. He was, in fact, about to pass out from hunger. He was so hungry. And that was the reason that Achimelech was allowed to give him Lechem Kodesh, holy bread. He left out that part. All he said was that he provided him with food. Provided him with tzeidah l'derech, with a large amount of food, because David was on the run, and that's he was trying to, as if he was, so to speak, support his rebellion by providing him with a large amount of food, so he can.
Actually, what did he have against him?
What did Doeg have against Achimelech?
No, yeah, why is he making up the story? He must have had something against the Kohanim from somewhere to do
It seems like he really did not have anything against the Kohanim. Rather, he was trying to show loyalty to Shaul HaMelech. He's trying to make it as if he's the only one who's on Shaul's side. How do you do that? By pointing out the rebels. That's the way you do that. And so that's why he's making up the story to make it as if, you know, I'm the only one loyal one to you. Now, Doeg, remember, he was a very important man. He was, according to some opinions, he was the head of the Sanhedrin. But yet, still, the fact that you're so biased can completely distort your view on things and push them to make up this whole story, just to show loyalty to Shaul HaMelech, because he was hoping for a higher position, more power. Another detail that he left out was, he just said, oh, he gave him the sword of Goliath. That shows that he's trying to really support his rebellion by giving him the most powerful sword. He didn't tell him, he didn't point out that David asked for a sword, but happened to be the only sword they had was the sword of Goliath. Yeah. That's what happened. That's what really happened. He didn't plan to give him the biggest and most powerful sword. That was just the only thing they had left, because they wanted to give David something. So he's painting a picture in a way where it makes Ahimelech look extremely guilty. And now Shaul is buying the story. The king calls Ahimelech, the son of Noiv, Menachitu v'koyen, v'eskol beis avi v'koyanim, asher v'noiv, v'evoyu kulam el ha-melech. He calls over the king of Noiv, he calls over his family, all the koyanim. He wants to hear from everybody what went on. V'yemer shol, shema no benachituv, v'yemer hineni adoini. He's calling him Benachituv, the son of Achituv, because Achituv was the family who was siding with David. And that's another thing that Doeg, the way Doeg calls Ahimelech, he doesn't call him Ahimelech, he calls him Ben Achituv. Because he's trying to point out that Achituv is on the side of the rebels. The Achituv was joining forces with David and Melech. And Ahimelech is the son of Achituv, so naturally he's probably going to go after his father. V'yemer Elav Shaul. Shaul turns to Ahimelech and he says, Lama kashartim alai atov ben Ishai? Why are you plotting together with the son of Ishai? You supplied him with food, with a sword. You consulted the Urim and Thummim for him. Clearly, you're plotting against me. Ahimelech replies to the king, and he says, he's stating four reasons why he never would have dreamt that David was rebelling against the king. First of all, if you might want to say that David naturally was a devious and rebelling kind of guy. It's not true. David is naturally a very loyal person. K'David Ne'eman. He's a very loyal person, naturally. There's no reason I would think that he would rebel. Secondly, he's Chosan HaMelech. He's part of your family. He's part of your family. Why would someone in your family try to come up against you? Not only is he part of your family, but he always follows your rules. You can't say that he was, he wasn't in a powerful position, and that's why he's trying to rebel, because he, in fact, had a very powerful position. He was held in a very high esteem in the palace. There was no reason for me to think that he was trying to rebel against you. I have four reasons that would offer the opposite. He's now claiming that he's completely innocent, which is in fact the truth, and he's begging for his life. The king Shaul does not buy the story of Ahimelech, he does not believe him, and he's planning now to kill him on the spot. Vayomer HaMelech LaRasim HaNitzavim Olav, Soibu V'Amisu Kohen HaShem, K'gam Yodam Im David Chiyodu K'varechu, L'Golus Ozni. He's turning out to his soldiers on site and telling them, I want you to murder and kill out the whole family of Achimelech, him, all the Koyanim, all the priests, the whole city must be killed. The servants, the soldiers of Shaul refuse to follow his order because they knew clearly that Doeg was lying. It was clear and obvious to anyone who would be willing to listen. Anyone who had a bit of common sense know clearly that Doeg was lying. But because Shaul was so biased, his mind was so skewed. Again, as we mentioned before, because he had this bad spirit that was possessing him, this Ruach Ra that was possessing him constantly, he was not able to see the truth for what it was. And he could not read between the lines and realize that Doeg was lying. Only everybody else, all his other soldiers, realized that Doeg was clearly lying, and they refused to follow the order and kill out the whole city of Koyanim, of priests. Vayomer HaMelech LeDoeg. Doeg here is spelled differently without an aleph. Soivatov Gabo Koyanim. I want you to be the one, since you were the one to reveal the fact that they are rebelling against me, I want you to be the one to go ahead and kill them out. Doeg turns and kills 85 Koyhanim right there on the spot.
Why didn't they do something to protect themselves? There was only one person that was against them. The soldiers weren't killing them.
You're right.
One guy. So they couldn't get him, jump on him and hit him in the head or protect themselves.
Well, first of all, you have to remember that they were Koyhanim. They were Koyhanim.
All right, fine.
And Doeg was a trained warrior. Well, you have a trained warrior with a sword in his hand.
But he still won against a whole bunch of them. Somebody should have tried to save himself. I don't mean, just, okay, kill me.
You're right. It's a good point. But I think if you have a trained warrior against a bunch of...
Yeah, but when you have 50 against one, I don't care how good the guy's warrior is doing. He's shooting him, you getting back at him and hit him in the head with something else. I mean, it seems hard to understand why they would let themselves get be killed like this. If all the soldiers were going to do so, what can they do? All the soldiers,
right.
They refused. It seems hard to understand.
Right.
Okay.
It just wasn't all adults. It said, you know, there were... It was kids.
Right, there were kids, too.
Women. We get to this, Pete. There must be a reason that they got killed out. They did something wrong.
Right.
Are you going to get to that point? Or
we're going to get to that.
What was the reason that they did something
wrong? We're
going
to get to that.
Before this.
Yeah, we're going to get to that. I just wanted to point out that over here, the name of Doeg is spelled differently. Without the Aleph, it sounds more like Doeg, like Doug. Dog is a fish. Chazal explained that Shaul was telling Doeg, Nitpasta kedag, you were caught like a fish. You were the one to frame Achimelech, and now you should be the one to kill them as well. You were the one who set them up to be murdered. You should be the one to carry out the decree as well. And you will be, obviously, Doeg was charged for that as well. Not only did he set them up, but he also was the one to actually kill them. Another pshat that it says, the Medrash brings down, that Doeg is from the... If you notice, it says Vav Yud, Doeg. Vav Yud spells Vai. Like HaKadosh Baruch Hu was sitting and waiting for when Doeg will go... Yotzal Tar B'Sparah, he will go off the Derech, he will... turned to do the wrong thing. Hashem was waiting for that moment to happen, and when that finally happened, Hashem says, "Vai, vai." He's crying as if he's crying over Doeg, who turned to do the wrong thing. That's what the matter says. That's why over here it says Vav Yud instead of Vav Aleph. Besnoimir Kriyanim Hikol Ficherev. Doeg not only kills these 85 priests, but then he goes over to the city. and he kills out the whole city, women, children,
It seems hard to understand that they would let this all be killed. Nobody fought against them. I mean, we have one guy. The other soldiers are standing around and watching him do this.
I'm saying it was an order from the king.
Huh?
It was an order of the king. They couldn't really stop it.
Yeah, but they didn't take the order of the king. They wouldn't do
it. They wouldn't do it, but stopping
so they were
him.
Going against the king, too. I mean, you can go against the ones, you go against them. Try to save the people.
I hear.
The whole thing is hard to understand.
Here.
I mean, take them time to kill the children and the oxen and everything else. One person running around with a sword. Okay.
Yeah.
That's what happened, but...
Right. In any case, it's interesting to note that Shaul really had... Where he was supposed to kill out everyone, he didn't. When he was not supposed to kill out everyone, he did. By the city of Amalek, he had extra mercy... He did not kill out everybody. Yeah. He left the women and the children. Yeah, he was so merciful. He didn't want to kill out the animals either. Now, all of a sudden, that mercy is gone. He's willing to kill out all the women, all the children, the cattle, everything. Everything. That was the big hypocrisy and the main fault of Shaul HaMelech. The fact that he was merciful in the wrong place and he was very cruel in the other place. There was one boy from the city of Nive who managed to escape. His name was Avyasar. He ran over to the camp of David. And from then on, he was part of David's camp. We're going to see later on, he was the Kohen that was constantly with David HaMelech. David Avyasar brings David the bad news that Shaul killed out the whole city of Nive. Vayomer David l'Avyasar, yadati b'yom ahu ki shom doyeg ha'edomi ki hageid yagid l'Shaul anechi sabaisi b'chol nefesh beis avicha. David is now taking some of the blame. He's saying, it's really, on some level, my fault. I should have known that doyeg was going to be the one to bring the message to Shaul and tell him that Ahimelech provided me with food and a sword, and I should have anticipated that this would happen. So on some level, I am at fault for the murder of the whole city of Nive. Shvayiti al tira ki asher yivakesh et nafshi yivakesh et nafshcha ki mishmeres ato imadi. He's now telling Avyasar, I will protect you just like I will protect myself. Anyone who tries to kill you is trying to kill me. And another reason why he said this was because Avyasar brought the Urim V'Tumim, and now, obviously, he wanted to protect the Urim V'Tumim. And therefore, he's telling Avyasar, I will now go ahead and protect you with my life. We're going to see later on why this happened, and we're going to see the punishment that Shaul got for it as well. However, we see that many, many bad things happened from something that seems to me a very, very small thing. If Yehonathan, the son of Shaul, would have thought to ring David, to provide David with food before he escaped, all he had to do is give him two loaves of bread. And this whole thing would not have happened. First of all, Shaul ended up killing out the city of Nive. Doeg was sent to Gehenna, and the city of Nive was killed out just because of the lack of food that Yonatan did not provide David. It's amazing to see what the power of food has in this world. The Radak brings down a whole list of things that food can achieve. G'daylo l'gimo shemaracha akravim, drink and food can bring closer. Push further away people who are close. He can bring closer people who are far away. Those two examples are Yisroi, right? Yisroi we find by Yisrael that since Yisrael brought Moshe over to his house for some food, it says Vayochel Lechem, right? He invited him for dinner. That act of kindness brought Moshe to marry his daughter, Tzipora. And now his daughter was the wife of none other than Moshe Rabbeinu. You can see what a major chesed it is to invite someone over for dinner. And what a merit he had to be the father-in-law of Moshe Rabbeinu. And it says by Nevi Abal, the Nevi Abal were killed. It says that they were eating while they were killed. So too, over there, we see that the fact that they were eating and happy about it, that gave them the power to rebel against Hashem. So there are a few examples where food can really travel a long way. And this is the fact that Yonatan forgot to give, or did not think of giving David some food. That's what caused all this major havoc that ended up happening. Okay, we're going to stop here today.